Hello, and welcome to Viewpoints, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
Hello, I'm Nancy Goodman-Torpy.
And I'm Pete Torpy.
This week on Viewpoints, we'll start with a tip of the week, as usual. Then we'll talk about exercising and using talking devices to help you exercise. We're going to be focusing on another commercial source of accessible reading material. It'll be the National Braille Press this week. And then to finish up, we'll be describing some of the file formats that you can get audio material in. So this week's tip of the week is using talking devices to help you exercise. Depending upon the sport you're engaged in, it's kind of nice to have a stopwatch, a pulse monitor, or some other specialty equipment. Fortunately, there are many devices that provide audio output as well as having a visual display. So Pete, what kind of devices do you find useful?
Well, my favorite device, of course, is a human being.
That would be me.
One that talks.
I talk.
That would be you also. Now, but seriously, though, the first thing I like to know when I exercise is how long I've been exercising. So if I'm riding my bike or, my exercise bike or doing something else. And, of course, we may have mentioned this in previous shows, but there are many commercial devices like talking watches. So, for example, I just listen.
It is 2:37 p.m.
So there's an example of my talking watch, which...
Yeah, his watch isn't broken. We pre-record these shows, and it really is 2:37 p.m.
That's true. Right.
So I, for us.
So I get one of these inexpensive watches from Radio Shack, and I can put that on while I'm exercising and keep track of when I start and when I stop. Even these relatively inexpensive watches have some other functions, like a stopwatch function.
Stopwatch.
Whoops.
3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8.
So you can time yourself and go through various functions. There are also alarm functions and other functions. So the watch is pretty useful for that.
But with the stopwatch function, don't worry about it counting every second forever. It only does every second up to the first 10 seconds, and then it gets less often, so you don't have to listen to the thing talking at you the whole time.
Right, right. Well, the other reason to get an inexpensive one is I sweat quite a bit when I exercise, so it's good to have inexpensive sources of some of these things. So in addition to timing myself, I also sometimes like to know what my pulse is to keep it at some specified rate. And so for my birthday last year, people asked me what I wanted, and I said, well, if you could find me a talking pulse meter, that would be great.
Unfortunately, we couldn't find a talking pulse meter, but our daughter's big into exercise. She's been running and participating in triathlons, so she's pretty familiar with what's available. She's got a pulse monitor that her boyfriend bought her for her birthday, which was very romantic, we thought. And she knew that it chirps when you get outside of a specified range that you've set, and she suggested that Daddy try one of those.
So with a little bit of setup, I have, maybe Nancy or one of the kids, in this case, set up the thing for me ahead of time with my minimum and maximum pulse. And then as I'm biking along on my exercise bike, until I get up to the minimum pulse rate, it'll go cheep, 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 and then it stops chirping.
That's not a reference to the price.
No, it isn't. That's true. But then it stops it stops chirping, and when it's quiet, I know I'm over the minimum and below the maximum. And if I start exercising too hard, again, I'll start hearing going doop, 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 and then I know I'm over my pulse rate, so I slow down a little bit. So that comes in quite handy.
He's been making a lot of use of that. That's been great.
Yeah, that's very good, so I know about how I'm exercising.
For another event, one of the kids bought him a talking pedometer. A lot of people like to walk or jog or whatever. That one worked pretty well.
Yeah, that was pretty good. Sometimes the pedometers aren't as accurate as you'd like them to be, but that works pretty well. That would even tell you how many calories you burned off if someone set it up ahead of time to put in what your weight was and stuff like that.
Right, and the pedometer actually has a watch function built right in, so they'll tell you how long you've been walking or exercising, and how many steps you've taken, how many miles you've gone. Of course, you need to calibrate it, but that's pretty easy. You might need help from a sighted person to do the calibration, but once you've got it set up, pretty much everybody's stride stays fairly constant, so it's pretty easy to work.
Right. That's pretty good.
And if all else fails.
If all else fails. So I often like to, you know, many people watch TV while they're exercising on an exercise bike or a treadmill, but I listen to the radio since the visuals aren't that important to me. And I'll often listen to NPR or something else. Usually NPR, though, I should
stress. Well,
unless
a football game's on.
Well, that's
but
true.
But the Bills are losing this year, so.
But often you can tell just from the breaks during the show and how the pacing of the show is, what time it is. So, for example, at 20 after the hour, NPR always takes some kind of little break to tell you about their sponsors and things. And at 20 of the hour, and of course on the hour, you get the news or some other kind of station announcement. So that can help you time yourself also. And you have something interesting to listen to.
We love NPR. Turning now to this week's low-tech item, we'll be talking about actually doing the exercise. We don't want to get too preachy here or anything, but exercising is good for us all, and it can be a lot of fun. And, you know, you might think, well, that's hard to do if I can't see, but it turns out with some modifications, you actually can. So let's talk about a few activities we've enjoyed doing, such as running or jogging. Do you remember how you got started jogging?
Well, I didn't think running was a natural or jogging was a natural thing for someone who couldn't see. But when I first moved to town, I used to live in an apartment building, and after work, I'd come out with a jump rope, and I'd stand in the parking lot in one of the parking spaces that wasn't being used, and I'd jump rope. And there was this friendly lady who would come home from work every day and see me jump rope out there. And one day she came up to me and said, hey, maybe we can jump rope together sometime. So I said, great. Well, you know, just let me know anytime. So a couple of days later, she came out with her jump rope. And I was a reasonably good athlete at the time and still liked to exercise.
He was 28.
Well, that's true. I was a little bit faster back then. But anyways, I'd be jumping my jump rope going, fa-lump, 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 fa-lump. And she came out with her jump rope and she went, fa-lump.
She was 29.
Fa-lump. But she wasn't quite as athletic as I was. So after a day or two of this, she said to me, you know, Peter, I think jump roping isn't my thing. How about if we run? And I said, well, how do you expect me to run? I'm blind. She said, well, that's good. That'll give you a sufficient handicap so that I can keep up with you. And so she was the person who actually started me out running. And what we, you know, did was I put my hand on her shoulder and run alongside of her. And the other trick is to doing something like that is to, I always kept myself like half a pace behind so that if she went up a curb or down a curb, I would feel her going up or down first, and then I knew what was coming. And the only trick to running with somebody like that with your hand on their shoulder and you out to the side is to make sure they give you enough width when you're passing poles and obstacles like that.
I think every running buddy of Pete's has walked him or run him into one mailbox. We all learned after the first one, but you know, poor Pete had to learn on the first one for each individual running buddy. There were quite a few mailboxes.
But only one.
So walking actually is a little slower when we walk him into mailboxes. It doesn't hurt quite as bad. And walking, besides following by the shoulder or by the elbow, various visually impaired people have various preferences. Walking, we actually walk around the neighborhood holding hands, and the neighbors all think it's so sweet because, you know, we're not 28 anymore. And so they think, isn't that cute? These older people, they're still holding hands. They must still like each other. Let me tell you, no matter how big of a fight we've just had, you know, and how tempting it is, I've never just abandoned him in the middle of the street and left him to find his way home.
You're so good to
me. We keep holding hands, and it works just fine.
So the other kind of funny exercise story is when I was in graduate school, I used to like to swim. In fact, I was still swimming a few years ago until I swam so much that I tore my rotator cuff. But swimming was a great exercise. And I would just, you know, with your hand out in front of you, you knew when the wall was coming and when to turn around. And what I did was follow the ropes when I was swimming, and I would always swim very close to the rope, and my arm would occasionally just nick the ropes, and I'd wind up with these huge welts, because after you swam a mile or so and you hit the rope so many times, you'd wind up with a big red mark that hurt. And so I went over to a sporting goods store one day and said, I'm looking for elbow pads. And they asked, for what sport? And I had to tell them it was swimming, and they hadn't heard of that before.
We got a good chuckle out of that one. So then some of the other activities we've done is riding a bicycle. Now, when Pete was a kid, he could see a little bit better. He didn't use his cane to navigate, but he'd go out on a bicycle, didn't use a cane to navigate on the bicycle either, but instead he just kind of played pinball without all the garbage cans that were out on the street.
Yeah, if someone left a garbage can in the middle of the street, I was one to get it.
But now he's wiser. And we got ourselves a tandem bike, and he sits in back, and he just pedals, or so he tells me. I think he's just eating popcorn, but I steer, I work the gears, the brakes, the whole smash.
She won't let me steer.
Right. Same thing in a canoe, you know. He sits in the front, actually, because the person who steers the canoe is always in the back. And fortunately, he isn't so much taller than I am. I can still see past him, and I just steer. Hiking gets a little bit interesting because the trails in the Northeast often have lots of rocks and roots and other obstacles you can trip on, whereas out West he got a little spoiled. The trails tend to be smoother, but we've got a little lexicon of terms that, you know, I don't bother him with details. If there's something he could trip over, I just tell him it's lumpy. If there's some obstacle on the side, I tell him it's skinny. And we've only got about 8 terms that we use, and that works great. But of course, we got out to the Southwest and we were hiking in the desert full of cactus, and I had to come up with a new term for the stuff that was sharp.
Yeah, and I generally know what these things mean. In fact, a lot of it is just, I mean, she'll guide me with her body or how she twists her hands, and a lot of people don't even realize that, you know, I'm following her or she's guiding me through some things.
Oh, man, you should hear the reactions we get from our friends. Nancy, aren't you going to tell them there's a step coming up? It's like, I just did. You just didn't hear anything.
Well, even your father, after we were married for about 20 years, I was out in the garden with him alone one day, and he looked at me one day. He says, you know, it's really nice to see how well you guys get along. He says, but I just can't understand one thing. I don't understand, you know, when you go upstairs or down curbs, she should give you a hand. She should let you know what's going on so you don't trip or anything. And I was just kind of flabbergasted that after, you know, watching us and being around us for 20 years, that he had never noticed all the subtle signals and, you know, that we're really doing that. So that was interesting.
As I recall, that was the same trip where my dad noticed the white cane in the car. He's like, why do you have a cane in the car? I said, well, it's for Pete. He's blind. He's like, well, I've never seen him use it. It's like, why would you have seen him use it? You never see him without me, and he'd rather follow me than use the cane.
True.
Okay, getting ready for our focus item. We figured our target audience would have a particular interest in accessible reading material since you're listeners to a radio reading service. So we've selected a discussion of one source of accessible reading material as the focus item for this program. We'll start by listing over a dozen sources just to give you an idea of how much is available, and then concentrate on one particularly useful source. So here are some ways you can access reading material. The first group are available to pretty much anybody. Well, number one is you could have a friend read or record material for you. But this turns out not to be trivial, which is why they audition people to be volunteer readers on the radio reading services.
Right.
Public libraries have all sorts of CDs, tapes, MP3 players for audiobooks. Bookstores are carrying more and more audiobooks. Audible.com, anything that's in print on the internet, you can access through your computer. Project Gutenberg, the e-books such as Kindle, Nook, Sony, iPad, etc., and cell phone applications. And then there are a number of other sources that are specifically intended for and available only to print-impaired people. So the National Braille Press will be the focus of this week's show. Then we also have radio reading services. Obviously, that's how you're hearing this show. The Library of Congress, National Library Service for the Blind and Physically Handicapped. NFB Newsline. Bookshare, Recording for the Blind and Dyslexic, which is mostly for professionals and students, and various agencies for the blind or print impaired. So today, as we said, we'll be focusing on the National Braille Press, located in Boston. According to their website, their mission statement reads, "The National Braille Press supports a lifetime of opportunity for blind children through Braille literacy and provides access to information that empowers blind people to actively engage in work, family, and community affairs." The National Braille Press is a Boston-based nonprofit Braille printing and publishing house founded in 1927 to ensure that blind people have the same access to information as sighted people in a medium they can read, Braille. And we'll give you the contact information towards the end of this segment.
We've used the National Braille Press a lot through the years in various capacities. And Nancy talked about some of the things that are available from other sources. But the National Braille Press has quite a diversity of things. They print a lot of Braille books. And one of the things we used quite a bit, particularly when the kids were younger, now they're out of college, they had a series of print Braille books where they would have publishers donate the print books for children's books to the National Braille Press, and then they would rip apart the books, take the bindings off, and then put clear plastic pages in between with Braille that described what was on the print pages. And sometimes they would describe
including the text,
right, that's right. And but sometimes they would even describe the pictures. And then they would put these books back together in a binder and sell it to, you know, whoever wanted to buy it for the same price as the print publication, which was really a nice thing because, in general, Braille is pretty expensive. So this was really a nice service between the publishers and National Braille Press.
Right. So we bought lots and lots of books for $5.95, $6.95. And then at the end of the year, we were so grateful and felt kind of like we owed it to them. We'd give them a charitable donation so they could continue this work.
Right. But we have a couple of shelves of those books, and those were great for reading bedtime stories to the kids when I was young, because I could read the Braille, and they could see right through the clear Braille pages to see what the pictures were and read along with the text.
And it works quite well in the reverse situation. If you have a sighted parent with a child who's learning to read Braille, then the child can be reading the Braille, and the parent can be, or other adult who's ever teaching the kid to read, can be looking at the print and helping the child learn to read the Braille.
One of their cutest books was that Arthur chooses a new nose or something, and they actually in Braille put the little dots in such a position to outline the shapes of the different noses that this character Arthur had wanted to choose from between.
And that was pretty effective too. They also have Braille books for adults and Braille magazines. In fact, we've got a copy of their catalog, which is available on their website as a PDF format. And I just have to tell you, I opened up the catalog the first time and I just said, oh, how cute! Because the cover of the catalog is an aerial photograph of a beach in Australia that's called Braille Rocks. And it actually has these enormous concrete hemispheres positioned on the beach to spell out in proper grade 2 Braille, Braille Rocks. And each one of these rocks is like waist high, and they've got close-up photographs of individuals feeling the rocks and embracing the rocks. And then this aerial shot, there's about 20 people out walking around the rocks. It's so cute. But anyway, they've got books for children, books for adults, magazines they Braille up. They'll do custom Braille work for whatever individual or company requests it and pays for it. They have a lot of books on computers. That's how Pete learned some of the programming languages.
Right. I've used those as a professional when I was working as a physicist at Xerox. And they actually printed up one of the very popular manuals on C programming, the C programming language, which I used as a reference for many years. They also, for computers, print up many help sheets. You know, sometimes you get, when you buy a program, you get a sheet with all the useful shortcuts and little hints and tricks. They'll print up those and send them to you. They have recipe books, all kinds of neat, useful stuff.
Well, even some fairly surprising titles, look through the catalog, they've got all sorts of stuff. One other interesting book that they were able to print up was the Harry Potter books, which, have been so popular. And every time I guess they're done with the series now, but for books 1 through 7, every time a new one was going to get issued, there was all this hype for months ahead of time. The next Harry Potter book is coming out on this date. Well, by gum, the National Braille Press managed to issue that book to arrive in the homes of people who ordered it that day, that very same day. And the way they did that was they got a special arrangement with the publisher. They got hold of an advanced copy of the digital book. And so they were able to braille it and have their braille proofreaders go through it and have it ready for distribution to get into these children's houses the same day all the other kids on the block could go out and get the print book. And that was really pretty cool.
So we have their website and
of course we
contact.
Do.
Oh, I figured we might.
Okay. So okay. So the name of the organization again is National Braille Press. Their website is www.nbp for National Braille Press.org. Their telephone number in Boston is area code 617-266-6160. Or they have a toll-free number, which is 888-965-8965. They have a special toll-free number for their bookstore, which is 800-548-7323. And as usual, if you didn't catch any of these phone numbers, you can contact us at Reach Out Radio, and we'll be glad to give you that information later. One other little thing about the National Braille Press is they have tours available to the public every Tuesday and Thursday at 10:30 and 2:30.
That was a fascinating tour. Yeah, that was fun.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
And you just call one of those phone numbers, contact them. The tours are free, and they do a great job, but you have to contact them 5 days ahead. Or they have an audio tour on their website if you're not expecting to be in Boston anytime soon. And, you know, when they give you the directions on how to get there, they're actually written to attract a visually impaired population. They tell you what kind of physical landmarks to expect as you're walking down the street, if there's a bump or a dip or whatever that you're going to come across. So we were just talking about one particular source of reading material, most of it in Braille, but they actually provide material in several different formats besides Braille. And for today's high-tech segment, we'd like to give a brief description of some of the more common formats for audio material, which would not include Braille. So, Pete, what's your favorite format for audiobooks?
My favorite format? So I would say one of my... I've become addicted to the National Library Service's audio books. I believe they're in DAISY format. And what's interesting about DAISY is it's a format, an audio format. Actually, it's even more than an audio format. DAISY entails, it can be audio or it can be just text formats or it can be a combination of formats. The Library of Congress right now is using the DAISY audio format. And what's neat about DAISY in any format you get it in is it has many different navigation levels. So you can navigate by page, you can tell it to go to a certain page number, you can navigate by chapter, by headings, and by various levels of headings, like level one headings, level two headings, etc. So, you know, as opposed to something like listening to a tape book or something like that, you have to rewind and go back and forth. It's a hassle to find the next chapter or the next section of a book. With DAISY, that makes it very easy.
As I recall, the other downside to tape books was that Pete would fall asleep and the book would keep reading. And at the end of the 45-minute side, all you'd hear is shh, shh, shh,
right,
shh, shh. So another common format is MP3.
Yeah, MP3 is another audio format, which is actually a compressed audio. So it saves a lot of space. And one of the nice things about MP3 is, as opposed to DAISY, which normally plays on special players that are, you know, DAISY's kind of an unusual format aimed primarily at the print impaired. MP3 will play on almost anything. So you can pick up an MP3 player at any of the, you know, local electronics stores, Best Buy, Walmart, stuff like that. In fact, Nancy,
I have one I love.
Yeah,
I listen
love
all the time.
You've been reading about, you know, five times as many books now that you have your MP3 player because she can carry this small device in her pocket and she'll go on a long walk or gardening, and that turns out to be really nice.
So another format is WMA. So that's a little different.
That is a little different. And that one frustrates me a little bit because I have these players that will play the special media like DAISY and stuff like that from the National Library Service and Recording for the Blind. So it'll read these special formats that other people can't read on a standard MP3 player. But when Nancy downloads a WMA book from the library, those are unable to read on my devices because WMA is a protected format.
Well, that's fair because I can't read DAISY format.
True.
But there are times we like to read the same books at the same time. We have like our own micro book group, just the two of us. And we, oh, did you get to this part? What part are you up to next? It's almost like who's ever in the lead is enjoying the book again when the other guy
right.
gets up to the same part. And but the problem is, you know, I'll download my copy from the library. He'll download his copy from the National Library Service or somebody. And so we'll each have a copy, but we can't listen to each other's copy.
Right. So sometimes it's frustrating. Make sure one of us can find it and the other one can't find an audio format in the same version. So it's quite a game to find that.
Right. Well, that's it for this week's show. Next week on Viewpoints, we'll be talking about labeling your clothing so you can tell what color it is and hopefully make it match. Audio described programming, whether it's for movies, television, or live theater. Our focus item will be on Audacity, which is a very powerful kind of sound engineering program that you can use for your own purposes at home on your own computer, and then a little bit on various sources of information for and about the visually impaired and frankly, where we get some of the information for this show. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to reachout@wxxi.org or call us at area code 585-258-0333. We'll try to address your question in an upcoming program.
You've been listening to Viewpoints, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. This program was hosted by Nancy Goodman Torpy and Peter Torpy. We hope you'll join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can download a podcast of the show by going to our website at wxxi.org/reachout and clicking on the podcast's link. Thanks for listening to Viewpoints, and have a nice day.